This week on the show, Apple subscribes to profit, big media subscribes to social media, and it turns out Hitler was a big fan of 3D. Right here on This Week in Media, number 223. Hey everyone, welcome back to This Week in Media. This is Alex, and we have a busy show today, talking lots about subscriptions and social media and how it applies to media. And we're here with Dane, the great Dane. Is that right?
Thank you.
the great Dane. And I'm sorry, I thought that was...
Go ahead, call me Great Dane. I love it.
Okay, Great Dane. From now on, you're just Great Dane. Does that come with a... I think you need a different... Anyway... I think you're now going to need a matching avatar.
Fantastic.
To match.
Love it.
Also, now, Dane, where are you coming in from? Dane Golden, are you in San Francisco?
San Francisco.
Fantastic. And Brady Brim DeForest coming in from L.A. Hey, Brady.
Hello, Alex.
And we also have Tim Street, who is back from Barcelona.
Hey, how's it going, Alex?
How was Barcelona?
It was great. I tell you, I'd never been to the Mobile World Congress before, and it was huge.
Did they pass any laws?
They did. They passed lots of laws about mobile products and services, and I was really surprised at how focused this event is on the carriers. You know, I originally thought, oh, there's, you know, worldwide, there's probably 30 cell phone carriers, but oh boy, was I wrong. There's well over 100, and so the ecosystem there of servicing them with, you know, new SMS technology or whatever, everybody's out to get their money and give them an enterprise solution. So it was quite interesting.
So these discussions are really to the mobile operators, and it's really showing what you can do next.
Well, it's really about, it's like a big CES, except it's just mobile focused, and instead of targeting consumers, it's targeting the phone carriers. And so big companies like Actel-Lucent or Cisco will have booths set up like any other trade show, and there's seminars going on, and there's networking and all that good stuff. But the focus is really, you know, how do you, like, I looked at one place where they took different apps, and the app developer would submit their app to this software, and it would go through the approval process for the developer, and then at some point the carrier would take over the approval process and they would go through it. And so it was just every piece of the puzzle when it comes to cell phones and delivering the service, they've got a way of figured out for them to handle that.
Now, is there any concern that they had there related to you know, people not really wanting to buy cell service anymore and just wanting data? Was that any part of the discussion?
Well, the only thing that came near that I came across was, you know, people were worried about bandwidth. They were worried about being able to serve enough bandwidth. And I was surprised that video wasn't as big a topic as you would think, given that aspect of it. Right. It was definitely a learning experience for me. I'd never gone before, and I highly recommend it. Barcelona's a great city, and if you get a chance, go.
I know I saw a very brief demo of LTE, and you know, from at an undisclosed location in San Francisco, and it was frightening. Like, I don't know how they'd be able to provide that ongoingly, but it's, you know, it was
fast.
It was the cleanest video I've ever seen on a phone.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Quite a thing. So let's dive into it. We have the TV industry is tapping into social media to keep viewers' attention. So this is from the New York Times. This is from one of our own oftentimes guests, Brian Stelter. And he's talking really about, you know, how all of this stuff is being used. Twitter being able to, a lot of people using Twitter as a measurement tool, using Facebook, and really getting groundswell for a lot of these shows. Brady, how important do you think social media is to today's, you know, TV programmers?
Well, I think for a point of viewing, it's very important. taking the activity that's happening in the social layer and leveraging it to either increase eyeballs for a telecast or kind of add that additional stickiness that that a broadcast needs is you know, something that I think all the networks are paying attention to. Specifically, when it comes to live programming, there's actually, you know, a tremendous amount of additional content that can be, and you know, context and experience that can be provided this way. The key is really being able to leverage it, and for the, you know, for the networks who have multiple divisions that are all, you know, focused on different metrics. For instance, you know, the guys at ABC.com are focused on page views. And the challenge is leveraging you know, the social layer in a way that drives, you know, the metrics in the right way for the network.
Tim, does this, is there a danger of having this become a distraction? I mean, when they're, you know, the thing is they're making media. Is it a is there a danger of doing so many different things that people aren't actually watching the shows anymore?
Well, there's always that, and that's happening with or without them. So the conversation is going on. I talk to people about this all the time, and you know, traditional TV people look at me like I'm crazy when I tell them, you know, you guys know how to make shows, but you don't know how to have a conversation. And they're like, conversation? It's just a TV show. People are going to watch it or they're not. I'm like, no. There's a conversation going out there in social media, and it's happening with you or without you. You can listen. You can listen and be a part of the conversation. You can listen and be a part of the conversation and monetize it somehow. Or you can let somebody else listen and monetize it, and you don't get a cut of that.
Well, and one of the things that I've been kind of I tweeted yesterday in this kind of, I was talking, going back and forth with people about content and community and everything else, and really community really is the new king. You know, content is really the thing that it seems like that's what's happening, is that we're going towards community is king, content is the draw, you know, to get you in there. But really, you've got to find, it seems like you're starting to have to find a way to not only use these tools to bring people to your content, but use that content and somehow be able to form a community around that. Dane, is this going to be something that's going to be hard for traditional media to actually be able to synthesize, because it's just something that's so outside of their normal operation process?
No, I think that they're hopping on to this, and we'll see more of this with the Oscars this coming Sunday. But there was another article a couple months ago in Fast Company about Chloe Sladen, the woman who is running this division for Twitter that's reaching out to television networks. I think it's really important for them simply because if you're watching it live, you're not watching it on your DVR. And if you're watching it live, you can't skip through the ads.
Well, and one of the things that's interesting about this, and anybody can jump in here, one of the things I think is interesting is that there is a social aspect to watching something live. And maybe this is a way to get people to come back and watch it in, you know, synced up. You know, so we're all watching it on our own speed, but if we were, the more we're connected to a bunch of other people watching the show, maybe it makes it more interesting. I know that there are live events that we do within the Pixel Corps, and part of the value is that everyone's watching it at the same time. So people are asking questions, they're discussing it with each other, they're doing all these things, and those are things you can't do on a DVR. Is that, do we think that that is something that might become more important to kind of hold people in place?
Well, it definitely is. I mean, apps are being launched, and they're trying to address the DVR issue as well. ABC has an app coming out, I think, this week for the Oscars. Well, it should be this week, where they're going to have multiple camera angles backstage, you know, for the acceptance speeches, backstage preparing to walk out on stage. So it'll give you a behind the scenes look at the Oscars for the first time. And I think that's going to be really interesting. The other thing that is happening out there is there some of the apps, the TV follow along apps, are using Shazam technology to listen to the audio of a program, so that when it's on DVR, it syncs to the audio. So if you're watching it later, you're still getting an interactive experience that's synced to that audio. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out when it comes to creating that community. I mean, if you look at these shows, what they do is they create a global local community. You know, come Sunday night, everyone who's interested in movies comes together to see the best of the best and see who's been rewarded. And that's a global, local community.
Now, the question is it, would this experience be better just online? I mean, does it? This is one of the things that we're looking at the IRC on Hey.com, and Lucky Phil is saying that the web is merely a delivery mechanism, and so is the cable TV box. They will come online to these events eventually. The question is it better to just have the experience? Do people really want to have a separate experience of their iPad and their TV, or do they really want just an experience where they're able to be part of all of those pieces while they're watching that content?
I think it depends on the viewer. I do think that the social experience of television is really important. And when you're watching, a marathon on a weekend with a bunch of friends, or you're tuning in, at 7 p.m. on Wednesday for a show, you know that the following morning at the water cooler in the office, everyone's going to be talking about it. I think that shared experience is really important to replicate. And there are a couple of different startups out there that are working on this problem. One of them is Philo, Tunerfish, that came out of Comcast, is also working on this problem. That to me is the real critical piece here. It's less providing a viewing experience that is multi-screen and more replicating the appointment viewing style experience in an on-demand world.
It really depends. I can definitely see how it really depends a lot on the type of content too. I mean, so for instance, if I'm watching, Hawaii Five-0, I'm probably not that interested. I mean, I'm into the show. I don't want to talk to anyone about it. I'm trying to, or so on and so forth. But if I'm watching the Super Bowl, maybe I want to be linked in with, thousands of Steeler fans so we can all commiserate together when we lose. So anyway, but the idea is that, those types of events, there's probably, I would really enjoy watching the Oscars and being able to be in big communities where we're all chatting, chatting at the same time, talking and going through all of those things. So it does seem like it's very content dependent as far as how people might want to, interact with those processes. So we'll see. Go ahead.
I just wanted to add that it said in the article about how during the Grammys, people saw Howard Stern was tweeting because his movie Private Parts was on HBO 2, and suddenly people were saying, "Hey, maybe I should switch over from the Grammys to watch Private Parts." I'd love an even further mashup. I'd love to see a scroll during the show, and it's just Howard Stern's live tweets.
Well, and I think it'll be interesting. I think that that's where something like TweetDeck becomes really interesting. If you're following enough people that are at an event, and you can just see all the stuff kind of happening at the same time, where you can set up the follows and put them all together. So, and then that just reaches a whole new level of geekdom. Speaking of geekdom, this is according to Reuters.com. Comcast is going to launch a 24-hour 3D TV channel. So you're going to see everything from NHL matchups between the Montreal Canadiens and the Calgary Flames, but also African safaris, haunted castles, and dinosaurs, among others. They're diving into it. I mean, we've been talking about, HBO 3D. There's a lot of, if you go on Comcast now, if you just go up to, there is a 3D section where you can watch a variety of 3D movies. So it's, they're starting to build it up. Are you guys going to go out and get a TV? Are you ready for 3D? Anyone? No.
I have a ViewMaster. I have a 3D ViewMaster.
I don't think that'll work.
I was talking to the guys over at Comcast about this, and they're rolling it out, and they're rolling it out with spectacle first. They've licensed some concerts. They have different. I want to say nature films.
I actually think that they're doing the right thing here when it comes to what they're releasing. I think that one of the things that we've been talking a lot about in the office, because we've been shooting a lot more 3D, is what is 3D good for and what is it not good for? And one of the things that a lot of us have kind of landed on is that we think that, a lot of us don't like watching movies as much as we thought we would in 3D, but we really like watching experiential stuff like nature, like, those types of things tend to translate because you feel like you're there. You know, whereas with some of the movies, you just feel like, you know, it's the way it pieces together is a little more challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also, you know, back to that old, you know, whenever there's a technological advance in entertainment, spectacle comes first, then story.
Right.
And, you know, it's going to take a while for people to really get their hand around how to use 3D in a storytelling process.
Is this a glasses-free 3D that they're
Well, this is just 3D. They're just passing you 3D so that you have to figure out how you're going to watch 3D. You know, it depends on whether you're using a, you know, you could be using, you know, active or passive. It just depends on what kind of TV. They're just sending the signal in 3D. So all the TVs look at it differently.
It kind of reminds me of Mark Cuban's play in the early 2000s. With HD, he launched a satellite channel called HDNet.
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those things, like any channel that's based around a format exclusive doesn't have long-term legs, in my opinion. People tune in for content and not for format, so I agree with Tim, it's spectacle. I bet you in a couple of years, Xfinity 3D is gone. But, I mean, that's a natural evolution of it, right? Eventually, if the experiment works, then they'll start pushing 3D content through, you know, their other cable networks and other cable channels.
Interesting. So we'll see how that goes. Also, on a more creepy side of this, this is according to the Star, an Australian filmmaker discovered two perfectly preserved 3D films the Nazis made 75 years ago. Now, I don't think this is necessarily good PR for 3D, but evidently they shot everything from the Olympics to, you know, they had 3D magazines. They really got into the whole, you know, documentaries in 3D. So this kind of gives you an idea of how far back a lot of this works. The, you know, 1936, they were doing it instead of the 50s. And they were just doing very, very simple processes. They were taking standard 35 millimeter cut in half into the split screen. So it wasn't, they weren't doing, they didn't have two film canisters. They didn't, and everything was kept very, very simple. And according to this, it's actually in very high quality. Tim, do you see these films finding their way onto Comcast soon?
Yeah, they'll be right there with the Elvis Alien 3D movie that was discovered as well. I think the National Enquirer has that one coming out. You know, it depends. I mean, would the History Channel be interested in having a 3D channel that this would appear on? I mean, quite possibly. Who knows? You know, like Brady said, I mean, I totally agree with that, you know, we don't have any dedicated HD channels that are just HD footage now. I mean, It's every channel has gone HD because that was a successful technology that you know, people got a benefit out of.
Now, do you think we're going to get to a point where everything is 3D?
It depends. I mean, everything went color for the most part. It was beneficial to go color, even though people were against it.
I still think that's a fad.
It's gonna everything went sound, even though a lot of people were against sound in the early days. 3D seems a little more elusive in that we've had 3D for a really long time, and it's always been a novelty. It's never really caught on. You know, it's kind of like a special effect. You know, we don't have a special effects channel that we've learned how
but
to
we
use.
We should.
Yeah, but we should for the Pixel Core team. But, you know, you take a look at special effects. You know, they were a novelty at first, and then it was figured out how to really integrate them into a story, whether that was Star Wars or T2, you know, Terminator. That was great special effects storytelling.
Right.
You know, during that time, though, I mean, the Nazi Party was experimenting with actually a lot of different types of media, including the famous director Leni Riefenstahl, who was emulated in a lot of sports films even today. And then even the Olympics in 1936, they were televised on closed-circuit television. So they were experimenting in a lot of ways, not just 3D. Some of those ways, television and film techniques, still are with us today.
So we'll see if we see this on Comcast anytime soon. I probably doubt it. Probably would be a risky thing to do early on.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it.
I'd love to see what it looks like. But I think it'd probably be a risky content selection, at least at the beginning. So we're going to jump to what is probably the biggest story of this week. And that is, of course, Apple unveils a digital media subscription service. So Apple, you know, this has been something that, you know, people have complained about and talked about that, you know, Apple, you know, we can't keep on buying one copy of Wired at a time. You know, we need to be able to have, you know, the publishers need to be able to have a new way to do subscription in a nice, easy way. And Apple has done that. They have provided a subscription service. Now, of course, there is a catch with Apple. There always is, and there is it's 30% cut of the revenue. So, if now here's the kind of to set this up. If you bring your own subscribers into the service, you keep 100%. So it's not that Apple's taking revenue on everyone using the service on an iPad or iPhone, but if they come through Apple's purchase system, then they take 30%. Apple's argument is, we brought you that consumer, we brought you that customer, and in return, we want 30%. And Apple says you have to basically provide the same deal or better inside of the app as you do outside of the app. So you can't make it more expensive somewhere else. So that is, you know, that's what Apple set up. And, you know, people are, Tim, people are tweaked. Just a little bit.
It's always about the vig, isn't it? you know, I'm. It's hard for me to comment on this just because I drank the Apple Kool-Aid a long time ago, and I see a huge value to what Apple has built. And you know, the Federal Trade Commission is now involved in this. They're looking into this issue to see if it breaks any, you know, rules or regulations, laws, whatever. I don't know. You know, they built the system. They're letting people, you know, people don't have to come there to sell their wares. And
well, in some ways, isn't Google Apple's best friend here? Because, you know, they're selling more Android. They're selling more Android phones than they are iPhones. And so it becomes very difficult for to make the argument that Apple has a dominant position in the industry when they're not even selling a majority of the operating systems.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it was a shopping mall and Apple was charging rent for their shopping mall, that's one thing. But if they're charging rent for the shopping mall and a commission on every sale in the store, that changes things a little bit.
Maybe, but one of the things about this is that you look at something like Walmart. Dane, this is going to throw this to you. You look at something like Walmart. Walmart oftentimes provides builds an enormous amount of pressure on people who sell products to them about how much it's going to cost and how it's going to be packaged and what it's going to look like. There's a lot of control that they have over that process, and their threat is mostly, we'll just buy it from somebody else. But they'll tell people that you need to package it a certain way. They're now instituting, you know, companies need to put in RFIDs so they can track it more effectively. How is the Apple Store any different than, you know, the Apple Store control any different than that, or a theater saying that you need to, you know, you have to buy all of the popcorn here, you can't bring it in? Is there any distinction there, Dane?
No, there's no distinction, but I'm wondering if you're going to take that retail model. What about, do you remember all those stores when they actually, you used to be able to buy electronics in multiple stores? They would say, we have the lowest price, but it was only because the same exact product had a different SKU in another Circuit City versus Best Buy. It was the exact same product, a different name, essentially. I wonder if, for instance, National Geographic could say, well, we're going to call it the National Geographic Red when it's on Kindle, and the blue when it's on Android, and the green when it's on...
But isn't really the danger here that for the people who are selling, you know, selling these, the problem that they really run up against is they still get to keep 100% if it's coming in from anywhere else other than Apple. They're keeping their 100%, or they're keeping whatever percentage they've agreed to if they have somebody else doing it. The issue is that the Apple Store, this is what scares them, and it should scare them, in my opinion, is the Apple Store is so much easier to buy on that the vast majority of people are just going to order it from the Apple Store.
Of course.
And that's the issue is that they, You know, and that's the and Apple's arguing that we made this really easy, and that's why people are going to order it. I'm not going to order. I'm never going to go to if I could buy Kindle books through Apple, the Apple Store. I mean, through the App Store, I wouldn't buy them on Amazon.com.
I do want to say that the one thing of note with the Daily, as I understand it, they're not selling any ads through iAds. They're selling it through a third party. The subscription model with magazines, no one knows even how much those things cost because they're always changing it with special deals. The key is how are they going to sell ads? And I think that's the real thing that will decide for them whether they participate in this or not.
Brady, do you think this whole system that Apple has set up is sustainable?
You know, it's a great question, Alex. I think that the other layer here with subscriptions is that Apple isn't necessarily going to pass through the subscriber information.
Right.
And for the magazine business especially, that's a huge revenue center.
Well, it is, but again, like for instance, they don't get that magazine subscription when they're listening to us for everyone who buys it at a newsstand. I buy a lot of magazines at the newsstand at the airport before I go. They don't know me at all.
Sure, no, and you're completely right. And you know, the reality is too, the newsstand gets a cut.
Probably at least 30%.
Definitely. So I absolutely think that this is a sustainable model. I mean, Apple's always been about building the top to bottom solution, and they build vertical ecosystems, and they tend to do it very well because they control the entire experience. So the reason that iTunes sits where it does in the market is because they enforce 99 cents per song for a very, very long time, and in a similar way, if they can deliver a superior magazine subscription experience, then 90% of everyone in the App Store is going to subscribe through the App Store. And if I was a magazine publisher, I would certainly be frustrated. But if they're able to reduce the friction for the subscription process substantially, then Apple will make up for it in volume by delivering any more subscribers.
Now, for magazine developers, that makes sense. The folks that are, I think, the most upset, and this is according to DownloadSquad.com, Sebastian Anthony, speaking on IRC, or I'm sorry, Last.fm's co-founder Richard Jones basically said that Apple just effed over the online music subs for the iPhone. And what he's saying is that the bottom line is they were taking 30%. So if Apple takes 30% before it goes to the artists or the copyright holders, not really the artists, they're not, all these subscription services suddenly lose the chunk that they were making. And you could question whether they have a good business model if they can't figure that out. But but that's the question. Brady, do you think that's really going to be the issue more than the magazine holders?
Well, I think what's going to happen is Apple's going to probably kill those music streaming services. I mean, in a way, they're going to, price them out of competition. And iTunes is, queued up to essentially be a music subscription service. And so if Apple has, the advantage because they are the market, and they're going to price, Spotify or Pandora out of the game, or Last.fm, then that's what's going to happen.
Tim, it's
difficult for them to compete.
Tim, how long do you think before Apple launches a subscription service for the iPhone or for iTunes?
I would have thought it happened already. I would have thought 6 months ago. So I can't tell you.
Yeah. It just seems like it's right around the corner. It seems like it's connected to Ping. Ping is kind of a worthless environment. I mean, it's fun. I interact with people on Ping every once in a while. I mean, whenever they comment on my stuff, I always forget that people are watching what I'm ordering. And suddenly realize, wow, they must think I went into a heavy metal binge for like a week and a half, and I was like, people started commenting on it. And I was like, oh right, I forgot that they were all watching me order songs from Disturbed. So we'll see how that goes. Now, Google, of course, has got a OnePass subscription that they've announced. The music service is the rumors of a music service is growing. This is according to MusicWeek.com, and Google has launched the OnePass service. It's 10% instead of 30%, as far as and they're starting to go down this path. Now, here's the question, Tim: does this make it actually? Is Google in some ways inadvertently providing cover for Apple because the SEC is going to be looking at them? They're going to be trying to figure this out, or the FTC, and Google putting a head-to-head competition, doesn't this play right into what Apple needs to have happen in the industry?
Well, they need each other, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, it's that was always the argument about Apple in the early days. It's why Microsoft didn't squash them, kept them alive. Right. So.
Right. So So Brady, do you think that Google can compete head to head? Do you think that they will be successful competing with Apple with their own service? So far, the issue really has been for Google is that there's not as many people that want to spend money on the system.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we already see that in the Android app marketplace. I think that, the same thing could unfold in a Google Music subscription service. I think that Apple has a huge advantage. They have over 90 million credit cards that are already part of the iTunes ecosystem.
And it is so addictive.
So addictive, absolutely. And Google just doesn't have that same foundation in place.
I know. I was. I just launched a new computer that I'm going to be using for travel, and I just went to the Mac App Store and just looked at all the stuff that I bought on it and just hit install, 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 install. I didn't have to think about the serial numbers. I didn't have to think about anything else. I just hit the installs, and it just installed all those applications onto my new computer, and I was just like, oh, I don't want to. That's when I think I tweeted. I was like, I don't want to buy anything else from I don't want to buy anything from that I have to deal with serial numbers again. Dane, do you think that anyone can catch up to Apple when it comes to these subscription services? In the near future.
Well, they've got a 10-year head start with iTunes, mm-hmm. I don't think that the antitrust issue is going to hurt Apple at all. I mean, remember when Microsoft had the antitrust, it took years and years, and by the time it was settled, they lost, but Netscape was dead. So I don't think Apple's too worried about that. I think Google could catch up, but it is going to take a Herculean effort. It's not just having devices. Devices are not enough. It's the environment has to win.
Right, and do we think that does anyone here think that a lot of publishers are going to they're threatening right now? But do you think that they're actually going to pull out of iTunes because over these onerous percentages?
I think if somebody has a competing platform, they might pull out because it'll draw attention to their platform. But until that happens, I don't see it happening. I mean, you don't just sell your DVDs at Target. You know, you sell them at Walmart. You sell them at Kmart. You sell them at a Blockbuster store if it's still around.
Right. So we'll see how this all rolls up. It's going to be a very interesting time in kind of the Chinese curse sort of way. So we'll see how this ties up. Brady, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BradyBD or online at www.brimdeforest.com.
Tim, where can people find you?
You can find me at mdialog.com.
And Dane, where can people find you?
At Dane Golden on Twitter, or just Google for the word hey.
That is such, I can't believe that you got that you got hey.com. When did you register that?
1995.
Jeez.
$50.
That's what I call
wow.
Forward thinking. That's all I got to say. If you ever need to retire, I bet you could just,
Anyone has a few million they want to spend, I'm offering it right now.
Very good. Hey, this mess that you've been listening to is This Week in Media. We are over and out.